feel like I'm driven by forces I don't understand. Led by the nose with invisible hands. Most of the time I don't know who I am, a witch and wolf that I want to feed.
And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight from Red River Radio. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director here, and returning to his hometown in Shreveport, native James LeBlanc and his band, the Winchesters, along with Nashville Star winner Angela Hacker and James's own son, Dylan LeBlanc. They're going to be performing at Strange Brew on Wall Street in Shreveport this Sunday, the 16th at 7 p.m. with an opening set by our very own Daniel Smalley from here in Shreveport. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios is James LeBlanc, and he's going to be discussing his album, I Can't Talk This Morning, James. So, James, welcome back to Shreveport, and just wanted to talk to you about your early years here in Shreveport, the formative years that made you pick up a guitar and start a kind of a crazy life of a musician. How does that happen?
Man, I don't know. Apparently, I come from a pretty musical family. My dad had a guitar and a great voice, and he loved to play and sing, and he did it as a hobby. He actually worked at Libby Glass out there on Juella as a career or whatever, but pretty much every day, you know, he would come home and pick and grin a little bit. And my mom's dad was a guitar player. My mom's mom liked to paint pictures and write lyrics. And so I was kind of born with it. It just kind of happened. And as soon as I got old enough, around 7 years old or so, I just started doing what my dad did, which was play guitar. And not too long after I started learning how to read and write, I started, you know, writing poems. And it just seemed like the thing to do. And it was extremely natural. And just something I've always done. And then when I got old enough to start thinking of what I wanted to do with my life, you know, and how to make a living and stuff, I couldn't think of anything that I would rather do than make music, write and play and sing music, and I still can't think of anything I'd rather do.
Once it's in your blood as an artist, I mean, yeah. The expressive part of it.
Love it.
So, that's the joy of it all,
so,
you know.
I've been able to make a living out of it, you know, and so I love it. And I still love it as much as I ever did.
Well, now, and you're up in a famed area of the country. Muscle Shoals, for those who don't know, in the recording business, is legendary. It's like Memphis and Sun Studios. There's a few spots around this country that they have so many wonderful ghosts walking through the halls of these places that it just blows your mind.
Man, it's amazing. Where I wound up landing in my career through the years is a place called Fame Studios and Fame Publishing in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and the proprietor there was a man named Rick Hall, and Rick cut some of the greatest R&B records that were ever recorded in the 60s and the early 70s there in Muscle Shoals, and they signed me to a production contract and a publishing contract in the late 90s. And I was with them for 14 and a half years, and it was great. It was great.
And Rick Hall, who is sort of the legendary man behind Fame Studios and Fame Publishing, he goes all the way back to a classic place in this country, also part of that cadre of mythical places, and that's Tishomingo, Mississippi.
Yeah, man.
For those who are Robert Johnson and blues fans, everybody who's, or if you happen to watch Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, okay, yeah. Tishomingo and the Crossroads, okay, yeah, that's all you've got to say.
That's right.
There's a man up there in Tishomingo with a can. You sing into the can, he'll give you $5, you know?
And, that's
and,
right.
And that actually is where a lot of this kind of music got the start, those early days in radio, when it was literally you walk into a radio station and you play live on the air.
Yeah, man.
And that was it. And if they were lucky, they ran a wax master. They actually cut a record from whatever you did live, and that became your record.
That's wild. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
That's an amazing part of the history of the music in this country. So now you're coming back to Shreveport with a whole cadre of Shreveport natives. It seems like you're bringing back a whole other city to the town. Would you like to give us some of the background of the folks that are going to be on the stage
sure.
with you?
Well, yeah, on stage, I'll have Dylan, my son. He's a singer and a songwriter and an artist and a great guitar player. So he'll be with me. Daniel Smalley, who just this, like a month ago, relocated to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, but he's basically a Shreveportite. Mm-hmm. He was born and raised here. And he's going to open the show for me. And then the guy who owns the record label that put the record out, Keith Stegall, he's flying in for the performance, and he grew up here and started out his career here, and he lives in Nashville and works in Nashville now. And if you've ever heard of Alan Jackson or the Zac Brown Band, then mm-hmm. you know who Keith is, because he produced a bunch of those records and was also an artist in the early 80s. And so he'll be in the audience. He won't be on stage, but he'll be in the audience. And then Steve Baker is my manager. He's from here, and he's relocated himself to Raleigh, North Carolina, but he's also driving in. So he'll be in the audience. And and then I've got a bunch of folks from North Alabama going to be on stage with me. I got a guy named Kelvin Holly playing electric guitar with me, and he played with Little Richard for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years. And I got a guy named John Davis on drums from Green Hill, Alabama. He'll be with me. He's one of my favorite drummers ever. And then Jimmy Nutt is from Shreveport. He's going to be playing bass with me, and he co-produced the record with me, and it's his studio called Nut House Studios over in Alabama where I recorded. And him and I both graduated together from Captain Shreve High School back in the late 80s. And he'll be with me. And I got a guy named Brad Kuhn playing keyboards, and he comes from Dallas, Texas. And then he relocated himself up north to the Boston area, and then recently relocated to Muscle Shoals, and I'll have him with me playing keyboards. So it's a mishmash.
It's amazing. Amazing, you know, everybody grows up together, flies off to different parts of the world, but yeah. then, you know, the circle returns, so,
that's right.
as it always does. So let's go back into your early years. When did you pen your first song?
Oh, man, wow. I mean, I started, you know, after I learned two or three chords, you know. So I started when I was about seven trying to learn two or three chords that Dad taught me. And then, you know, I don't even remember what grade you're in, first or second or third grade.
Yeah.
You know, I started, you know, putting pen to paper and making poems. But, you know, my dad was really, I really liked the way, looking back now, I liked the way he did me and he raised me or whatever, because he wouldn't really cut me any slack, and I appreciate that now. So I'd write a song and he'd go, you know, that's just okay. So I appreciate that now.
Hurts at the time, but it pushes you.
Yeah, and if I was making a chord and I wasn't making it clean, he'd say, that's not clean yet. Yeah. You know, you need to go practice some more, then come back. So I really appreciate that now. But saying all that, and when I was about 15 or 16, I wrote a song and I played it for him, and he looked at me. He said, that's a good song. So I reckon, you know, 15, 16 years old, I wrote my first good song.
Right.
But I wrote at it for years.
Well, and that's,
you know, I still write at it most of the time.
And any good writer will tell you the revision process is what kills you, because you get it and then you're like, well, it ain't quite right. And boy, you know, you can go through that. I know an author who spent 20 years writing her first book. So
yeah. I write at it a lot more than I actually write it.
Well, and the song fragments, you know, Johnny Cash releases the basement tapes because that wasn't stuff he was going to put on an album, but now we cherish it.
That's right.
And the truth is, all of that stuff is part of that creative process. So
Oh, man. It
all matters. In the bottom line, it all paints a picture. It's like the little pixels of paint on the canvas.
Yeah,
it's all part of that.
That's right, man. You got to have the clunkers, right? I mean, you know, that's they're a big part of the story, like you just said, to get to the good ones.
Well, and if you're a good marketer, you come back and say, and here's the stuff we didn't tell you about as a joke album, and it'd sell like hotcakes, too, because people love that.
That's
right. Yeah, they love a little self-deprecation, too. That's good stuff. So, now, you formed a band back when you were teenagers, too, like most young musicians, you know?
Heck yeah, dude. Me and Jimmy Nutt met the first week of seventh grade. They called it junior high back in those days.
Right, yeah. Or middle school, you know, fancy word.
Yeah, sure. And we met first week of seventh grade, and we started co-writing songs, and we found a couple of guys that wanted to play music, and so we played music together. And then we relocated to Texas together in the early 90s. And at that point, it was rock and roll. We were pretty dead set on trying to be rock stars, and so we relocated to Austin, Texas for a year or two, and went over there and played a bunch of music. And then my dad passed away in the early part of 94 and the latter part of 93. I knew I needed to get back home and take care of my mom and whatnot.
And that was because of a tragic event.
Yeah, he got sick young and died young. So I came back at that point and regrouped a little bit. And that's when I set my sights on country music. And that's when I met Hassel sitting over there. I met Hassel Christmas of 1993.
Is that when the storytelling and the writing from the heart, from the trials and tribulations of your own life came into, that need to say it all?
I mean, you know, I've just been writing at it for all these years. It's like a practice, like a medical practice or law practice. It's just something I practice at. But I've always, you know, I love the craft of songwriting, and I always have it. I have so much respect for these people that I get to write songs with. They're so good at what they do, and the craft of it, you know, and just really trying to say as much as you can with as few words as you can. It's right. Not easy at all, actually. It's a heck of a gift.
Well, not only that, but also keep a rhythm, keep a cadence, and create a rhyme here and and there, you know, for that ring back.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I, talking about rhyme, I listened to Paul Simon's song, America.
Mm.
And nothing in that song rhymes.
I know, but it's a great tune.
There's not one line that rhymes. And, you know, I was listening to it, and I was studying it. That's what I like to do. When I get on something I really love, I like to really, really study it. And it took me 50 times of listening to that, literally. For it to finally dawn on me that not one line rhymes. But that's amazing. I actually tried to write a song that doesn't rhyme, and it sounded so awful.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. But anyway, just studying the craft of it, studying other people, what makes them tick, and why do I like what I like. And it's everything from the hi-hat to the kick drum to the phrasing of the words to the, you know, it's just, man, there's so much to listen to study and learn from.
Well, I mean, music is painting literally with sound. So
absolutely.
Every one of those instruments is just another brush, you know, another palette, another knife, another color.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
So now you've had the chance to write with the likes of Travis Tritt and Rascal Flatts and Kenny Chesney and so many, Martina McBride. You know, growing up, I mean, I'm a small boy from a small town. So growing up, I never dreamed, you know. Did you dream of that? Was that something you saw as a possibility that, oh, one day I'll be in Nashville with all these top stars?
Yeah, no, I didn't know, but I knew that I wanted to try.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to give it all I got. And I, you know, like I said, I wanted to be a rock star when I was 15, 16, right. on into my early 20s. And then, but then I knew people. That were living in Nashville, and I knew there were people there who were, you know, making a living writing songs and stuff like that, and through a mutual friend of mine named Chris McKay, I met Hassel Tickle, and he was living in Nashville, so I knew him, and he let me sleep on his couch for a long time, and and I went and visited a whole lot of publishing companies and stuff like that. And so I knew that it was possible.
Yeah.
And I also knew that I had what it took a lot, but, you know, so I had to have that.
Yeah.
You know, I had to believe that I could, you know, somehow carve out a life and a living in the music business. And so there was, you know, years that went by where I felt like I was beating my head against the wall. But I could never give it up. And then, you know, finally I got a break through the Hall family and through fame, you know, and that was my way in.
Well, let's move on to this album. This is your latest release, and it's called The Nature of the Beast. And on YouTube, there's a short little thing where you talk about how that song came about. Let's get into some of the substance of these songs, and what are you trying to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, right on, Nature of the Beast. Yep, I discovered alcohol and other substances in my early teens, and before I knew it, you know, it became as much a part of my life as breathing and eating and stuff like that. And then not too long after that, it became a problem. But I just really wasn't aware of the extent of the problem until, you know, a while back. And so I co-wrote that song with a guy named Travis Meadows and a guy named Matt Warren. Both of those guys are friends of mine. But Travis Meadows has had similar substance abuse issues. And so, that's what it comes from. There's a... I think there might be a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde in everyone, but it's a lot more pronounced in somebody with a with a drinking problem or other substances and stuff like that. It's really pronounced, and that's the case with me, and it's the case with Travis. And there's a lot of us out there, actually. But so me and Travis and Matt just sat down and kicked it around, and I had the title, but I wasn't even sure that's what it was about. But Travis spit out that first verse pretty quick. He's amazing. Look him up on YouTube. Investigate Travis Meadows. He's one of my heroes. So he spit those first few lines out. I feel like I'm driven by forces I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Led by the nose with invisible hands. Most of the time, I don't know who I am or which wolf that I want to feed. You know, I'm like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's that old, you know, there's two wolves in each of us.
That's it,
you
man.
Know, yeah, and it depends on which one you feed.
That's right,
that's
man.
The one you're going to be.
There's Jekyll and Hyde.
Spiritual, loving wolf, and then there's the wolf that is hungry, ravenous, and rabid.
Yeah.
And depends on which one you want to feed as to which one you're going to be.
That's right. That's a great whatever.
Yeah.
Fable, legend, saying, whatever. It's awesome. And so, yeah, man. And then I you know, the chorus kind of fell out of me on that song. And man, it just came together real nicely. That's what we do as pro songwriters. That was the first time I'd ever met Travis. I just walked in and shook his hand and sat down and said, "Hey, I got an idea called Nature of the Beast. What do you think?" And he said, "What's it about?" And I said, "I don't know." So we just started strumming our guitars and talking and getting to know each other. And that's how it happens a lot.
Serendipity.
Yeah, man. It happens that way a lot.
Drops right out of the sky. Or if you're a person of strong faith, then you know where it came from.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it all ultimately comes from.
Exactly. So so now there's some other tunes on here. And there's one that struck me, and that's called Mean Right Hand. And give us a little bit of background on that. And then I would like you to play that if you would for us.
Yeah, man, I wrote that with a lady named Leslie Satcher. And, I mean, the cool thing about a place like Nashville is, immensely talented people are all gathered there in the same place. They're all, you know, down there on Music Row at 16th Avenue and 17th and 18th Avenue. And on those six or eight blocks, there's publishing houses full of, you know, incredibly talented songwriters.
Right.
And so she's one of them. She's been up there for many, many years writing songs, and she's one of my favorite new co-writers. And I had the title, I heard it in another song, and I wrote it down and brought it into the deal and just started kind of three-finger picking my guitar. And it's another one of those serendipitous days, man. It fell out, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's one of my favorite songs on the record. So, would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
I took the keys anyway. 17 is a song kind of brave. So when he bailed me out, I said something smart. And for a simple man with a gentle heart, Daddy had a mean right hand. I never knew he had a mean right hand. And that's me, always push it to the limit. Ain't never happy till I hit it. Sometimes the only thing I understand is a mean right hand. And I made her cry again last night. Yeah, I was looking for a fight. Till she laid them pretty fingers on my lips and whispered, I ain't in the mood for this. Oh, she got a mean right hand. Left a kiss on her mean right hand. That's me, I always push it to the limit. Ain't never happy till I hit it. Sometimes the only thing I understand is a mean right hand. And I've had every kind of job a man can hold, but can't nothing but this guitar ease my soul. And that's me, I always push it to the limit. Ain't never happy till I hit it. It's a blessing, it's a curse, but for better or for worse, every night I give it everything I can with a mean right hand. With a mean right hand.
What else on the album would you like to share with folks about? Because there's a lot of substance in this album, and I want to give you a chance to really kind of let folks know what they can expect from this and from the show Sunday night.
I got a song on there called 4885, and lots of songwriters and lots of artists have songs about their home. Mm-hmm. They have songs called Home. Michael Bublé has got a cool song called Home.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to write one about home. And it's one of those rare things when it came, I don't know where it came from, but it came real fast, almost like I was taking dictation.
Mm.
Really almost like I was taking dictation from something or somewhere. And I was at the house when I wrote it, and it's a little house in the Dixie Garden neighborhood here in town. And two bedroom, one bath kind of thing. And it's where I was born and raised, and also where my mother was born and raised. So it was my grandma and grandpa's house back in the day. And it's just my homage, however you pronounce that, my homage to my home in the town and my memories and stuff like that. And it's real special to me and my mom. And a couple other people that live in the neighborhood, they like it too. So that one's special to me. I got a duet with my lady on there called I Ain't Easy to Love. And it's one of my favorite songs I've ever written. And my lady is Angela Hacker, who is also an amazing recording artist in her own right.
And she's going to be singing.
She's with me. She'll be with me. She's with me everywhere I go, thank God. Yeah. And we play music together. And that's a kind of a duet in the vein of George Jones and Tammy Wynette, old school kind of a thing. Yeah. And got a song on there called Beans, written by a guy named Shel Silverstein, and who was an amazing children's author and songwriter. He wrote Boy Named Sue for Johnny Cash and stuff like that. But my dad used to play this song, Beans, sitting around the house all the time. And anytime we'd go to a gathering with family and friends and bring our guitars, we'd always pull that out. And so I learned it. I knew it by the time I was 10 years old. And I don't know, I just thought it'd be really fun to record it. And so it's the last song on the record. So I'm proud of the cut of it. And it's a funny song. And so that's kind of paying homage to my dad, you know. So it means a lot to me. This record's awesome, man. I poured a lifetime of experience and things like that into the record. And there you go.
Sounds good.
Yeah, man.
Now, is this one of the few chances you've had to play with your son on stage in Shreveport, in your hometown?
Yeah. Well, you know,
I mean, Dylan's a rising star out there, you know.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
Yeah, you know, he's really making a name for himself. And Brady Blade is the one who brought him to my attention some years ago with Randy Brewer.
Yeah, man, he's a we don't get to play together that often, so it's super special when we do. But we did back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He started playing when he was about 7, and he already knew could work his way around the guitar by the time he was 10, and he also started writing poems and stuff by the time he was 10 or 11. So we play, you know, gigs together and whatnot when he was 10 or 11 years old. You know, that's how long he's been doing it now. And we'd go play for my sister's church and stuff like that. And there was a couple different coffee houses around here that we would play in and stuff like that. But it's always special to get to be on stage with Dylan. It really is. And I respect him as an artist and as a guitar player. Serious respect. And he's to me, he's extremely talented. And there's a lot of people that agree with me.
Yeah.
On that, so
I'm
not,
one of them.
It's not just Dad.
Yeah,
he's earned it.
Oh, and he already has a name around here.
That's right.
Everybody in this area understands Dylan LeBlanc is going to be another name from Shreveport, like so many others
that have
risen up and made Shreveport, you know, a place where it's a genesis place for a lot of music.
And athletes also.
Oh yeah, and athletes and artists. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, it's a great place.
Yeah,
something in the water.
Yeah, I guess. So it's in the river.
That's right, man.
So now let's get to the brass tacks. Give folks the information about the show. It's going to be Sunday night.
Sunday night at Strange Brew at 7 p.m. Daniel Smalley, who is an awesome singer songwriter, is going to open the show. He's going to play about 30 or 45 minutes, and you'll like him if you don't already know who he is. He's a really good artist. And the band and I will take the stage about 8, and we're going to do about an hour and a half. We're going to play the record. We're going to play a couple of oldie but goodie covers. We're going to play a couple of songs that other people have made hits out of that I've written. And it's going to be a good time at Strange Brew over on Wall Street. And it's going to be fun, man.
All right. James, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you.
You bet. That was James LeBlanc, who, along with his band, The Winchesters, Nashville star winner Angela Hacker, and his son, Dylan LeBlanc, they'll be performing a special homecoming album release show this Sunday, July 16th, at the Strange Brew. That's at 235 Wall Street here in Shreveport. The show begins at 7 p.m. with an opening set by Daniel Smalley. And for ticket information, you can go to Eventbrite. That's Eventbrite, Brite.com. And they'll get you all set up. We'll also have links on the web post for this spotlight today as soon as we get that up. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight. And for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.
I thank the Lord for you each morning, 'cause I ain't easy.